Match Chat is brought to you by Walters. Walters is your spot for all Florida State football games this season. Big game this Sunday night as the Noles will face LSU. Kickoff at 7:30.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Here's the 2-1. Swinging a fly ball right center field deep. Meneses chasing back toward the warning track, looking up, and it's off the wall. Heading home to score is Noisy. Machine headed toward the plate, and the throw in is cut off, and it's a two-run double for Shea Langeliers. Off the very top of the right center field fence, giving Oakland a 5-3 lead here in the 10th. Ruiz standing by, 1-2 the count. Here's the pitch. Swing a hard ground ball right side. It's through, a base hit into right field. Past the diving attempt of Allen, the shortstop on the right side. Cesar Hernandez will come in to score. Two balls, two strikes. Two on, two outs. Here it comes. Swing a high fly ball right center field deep. Pache going back to the warning track. At the wall, looking up. And it's gone! It's gone! And this game is over. The legend of Joey Meneses has another chapter. Nationals win their first walk-off of the season. It's 7-5 as they mob Meneses crossing home plate. His first career walk-off homer. A three-run shot just over the wall in right center field. And the Nationals celebrate their first walk-off in 2022, courtesy of Joey Meneses. Wow!
And welcome to Nats Chat for Friday, September 2nd, 2022. I'm Al Galdi, host of the Al Galdi Podcast. Mark Zuckerman is off for this installment of the podcast, but I'm pleased to be joined by the mastermind of this podcast, Tim Shovers. And Tim, my friend, we have quite the ball game to discuss and dissect. It isn't going to happen, and it is the Nats going the entirety of the 2022 season without a walk-off win. It took 131 games, but the Nats in their 2022 regular season finally have a walk-off victory, a 7-5, 10-inning win over the Oakland A's at Nationals Park on Thursday to win the series 2-1. The Nats get the walk-off win. The Nats get the extra inning win, improved to just 4-18 in extra inning games over the last two seasons. But most prominent of everything that went down on Thursday is the legend of Joey Meneses continuing to grow. The legend of our guy, Joey Four Bags, continuing to grow. The growth at this point is exponential. Joey Meneses on Thursday, 4-for-6 with a walk-off three-run homer, an RBI single, and two other singles. Tim, this has gone from like a cute, fun little story to now something that everyone has got to take seriously. Joey Meneses is a force. Joey Four Bags is a force.
Indeed, Al. You know, once Cavalli got hurt, it was like, okay, where are the September storylines for us to follow here? There are a few things, of course. But this Joey Meneses thing now, Joey Four Bags, I really want to see what the next month brings for his sample size, because his August numbers are pretty off the charts and jaw-dropping. And here we are on the first day of September, and he has four hits and a walk-off homer. And, you know, obviously, of course, small sample size. Want to say that, underline it, bold it, italicize. But there's something going on here. And if he has another month like this, Joey Four Bags is going to be on the opening day roster in 2023.
Oh, yeah. He might be your opening day number two batter, as he has become the every game two batter at this point with this team. It's funny that you bring up the Cade Cavalli thing, because this series against the A's started off in such a depressing way with that Cade Cavalli news of earlier this week. The Nats on Wednesday putting Cade Cavalli on the 15-day injured list with the right shoulder inflammation. You know, they won't say that his season is done. I guess maybe it's possible that his season isn't done, but I mean, you do the math, it certainly seems very likely that his season is done. He was supposed to start the game on Thursday. The baseball gods work in mysterious ways. And in a game that, you know, had you feeling down going into the game, again, Cade Cavalli isn't pitching. I mean, you know, let's be honest about this series. It's the two worst teams in the majors this season, the Nats and the A's. This game on Thursday, by the way, 4+ hours. Okay, that's another conversation. But it's like, none of it matters. And all of it is just fine because of this Joey Meneses thing. This Nats season has been lacking in not just positive storylines, but just also fun. Like, it has not been a fun season if you're a Nats fan. There have been so few fun moments. There have been so few fun games. There have been so few fun developments. This Joey Meneses thing is fun. What it means long term, I don't know. And at this point, I don't think you have to care so much about that. Just enjoy it. If you're a Nats fan, sit back, relax, and enjoy this. You've earned the right to just enjoy something. And I think that that's maybe the beauty of this as much as anything. It's just fun. It's such a welcome respite from everything else going on with the Nats right now.
Absolutely. Fun is the perfect word to say it, because we've forgotten this year that baseball can be fun. It's been miserable the entire season, and it's just been one thing after another. And here's this Joey Meneses story, which is just incredible and keeps on going. It took all the way till September to get a walk-off victory. Hats off to you and Mark for foreshadowing it in our last episode, by the way, on that. But entering today, right, they hadn't won 4 games in a row all year. They haven't had a sweep in over a year. Every single time you might want to get excited, you get punched in the gut. But today was just a fun win, a walk-off victory to start off a holiday weekend. And, you know, based upon what we saw on our Twitter account after the game, people were really excited. And I haven't seen that a lot. And it took really somehow to 131 games to do it. But it happened here finally.
Yeah, speaking of Twitter, the Nationals official Twitter account putting out a tweet after the game reading, and I quote, Joey Fourbags. Joey Fourbags is becoming a thing. Now, Kevin Franzen of Masson is taking credit for Joey Fourbags. So I don't know. We'll have to go to some sort of kangaroo court to determine who exactly gets the credit for the nickname Joey Fourbags. But whoever you want to give credit to, I know that Mark on this podcast said it. That's the first time that I heard it. Maybe Kevin said it as well at some point. I'm not saying that he's lying about that. But whoever came up with the nickname, who cares? Joey Fourbags is killing it right now. So, you know, it's so amazing, this entire story, and it's easy to take for granted. And, you know, if you're a Nats fan or a Nats observer, you can kind of become numb to the story. But let's think about this. August 2nd, the day on which the Nats traded Juan Soto and Josh Bell to the San Diego Padres, it was also on that day that the Nats selected the contract of Joey Meneses from AAA Rochester. The only reason that he's up at the major league level is because the Nats needed players off having traded away Soto and Bell on August 2nd. That was such a downer of a day. And yet, since then, Joey Meneses has appreciably outhit Juan Soto. Yeah, Joey Meneses now with the Nats has accumulated 104 plate appearances. He, over those 104 plate appearances, has an OPS of 1,011. As of the taping of this installment of the Nats Chat podcast, Juan Soto with the San Diego Padres has an OPS of 840. Not bad, but not as good as Joey Meneses. How amazing is that, that Joey Meneses over a month with the Nats has out-Soto'd Soto? Like, let that sink in for a moment. And again, what does it mean long term? I don't know. I don't care right now. Like, let's just enjoy this. Meneses is outplaying Juan Soto. How many people would have even listened to that on August 2nd with how disturbed and angry people were with that trade? And I don't blame anyone for being angry about that trade. And yet here we are a month later, and this guy, Joey Meneses, who most people had never even heard of, is outdoing Juan Soto since that trade.
I have one word to describe it, Al. Baseball. The sport that makes all the sense in the world because it's got every number in the book to back up and all the logic, sometimes it makes no sense. And this is just a perfect example of it. And looking at the stats, the August stats, I mean, his numbers, you said appreciably, they blow Soto out of the water, you know, much higher OPS and a higher average and all that. And listen, I know it's 1 month, the sample size and all of that stuff, but it is just a really funny thing how this doesn't happen in the NBA, right? NBA superstars don't hit 240 on the court, whatever that equivalent is, but that does happen in baseball. And this is just one of a very fun example of that.
Yeah, I mean, the only NBA equivalent I can think of is Lynn Sanity from more than a decade ago now, Jeremy Lin catching fire. Now, you know, if you apply that to Meneses, Jeremy Lin calmed down quite a bit after Lin Sanity, had an NBA career, but was never again at that height. We'll see what happens with Joey Meneses. We don't know. I mean, the other things, too, with Meneses, and again, this stuff is well known by now, but this is his age 30 season. This was his 10th minor league season. So, you know, it's not that like he's some 22-year-old who just was an unsung prospect. No, he's a 30-something who is a career minor leaguer a decade in the minors. He toiled for a decade in the minors, is only now getting a shot at the major league level, and is hitting like crazy. So Meneses on Thursday, like we said, 4-for-6 in the game. Let's just go through the specifics here because, you know, as I've talked about with Mark, it's not just the home runs. That's the thing. He's not just some one-trick home run hitting pony. He's a guy who can legitimately hit. He's good with two strikes. He's good going the opposite way. We saw more of that in this game. Meneses in Nats, one run first, RBI single up the middle for a 1-0 Nats lead. Meneses, bottom of the third, leadoff single up the middle on a 1-2 pitch. Meneses in Nats, one run seventh, one out single up the middle. And then the walk-off, 4-run 10th, a walk-off, 2-out, 3-run, opposite field home run to right center for a 7-5 Nats win. This was, again, the Nats' first walk-off win of the season. This win improved the Nats to 4-18 in extra inning games over these last two seasons. And Meneses hit this home run despite having been down in the count of 1.02. 1,011 is your Joey Meneses OPS over 104 plate appearances with the team. He is proving himself to be someone who can hit. It's so nice to see. He did have a fielding error in the game. So, okay, if you want to pick a nit, there's your nit to pick. Meneses in an A's, a 2-run 7th, overran the ball on a 2-out opposite field single by Sean Murphy through the right side of the infield. Meneses probably should be a DH, maybe should be a first baseman. We're not seeing him play first base. I actually would like to see that over the course of the rest of this season. But man, it is impressive. And you know, he looks the part too. I mean, he's a big guy. He's got a nice swing. I don't know. I mean, he's obviously not this good. At least I don't think that he is. But he certainly seems like someone who could be a legitimate hitter for the Nats, you know, as time goes on here. Like, is he a 1,000 OPS guy? Probably not. You know, again, you never know. But it's hard to believe that, like, he's just never going to be heard from again. You know what I mean? Like, it would feel like you have something in him. It's just a question of what exactly you have in him.
Well, let's play this out, Al, because you mentioned he's probably a first baseman, not a right fielder, to which I agree. So let's say he plays first base and we move Luke Voit to DH. I'm fine with not playing Nelson Cruz anymore. And I'm fine, frankly, and I know it'd be a little bit of a screw job because it's after September 1 and he couldn't join another team for the postseason. Can we cut Nelson Cruz? I mean, at a certain point, this is a sunk cost. There's a legitimate thing going on here with Meneses, and let's see what we have here. And if it comes at the expense of Nelson Cruz not playing anymore, that's fine with me. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I wouldn't play him every day. I mean, I don't think you have to cut him.
I'm saying done. Like, thank you for your time. Goodbye, Nelson Cruz.
You could do it. I mean, I wouldn't shed a tear over it. I don't think, though, that you have to do it. I think you just don't have to play him every game. And you for darn sure don't have to have him as your cleanup batter for every game. I mean, look, to Nelson's credit, he's getting some singles. He's drawing the occasional walk. He's still not hitting for any power whatsoever. And he's going to be gone after this season. Like, this is not taking you anywhere. So I would like to see, for developmental purposes, if nothing else, Meneses playing first base, Luke Voit DHing, and let's see what that looks like. Let's get this kid Alex Call some more at-bats. You know, if you're talking about who's going to play right field, well, you can shift some guys around. But the point is, you could play Call. You could play a little more of Josh Palacios. I mean, there are people who you could play. You don't have to keep playing Nelson Cruz on an every game basis. I mean, at this point, if you are the Nats, okay, and you are the worst team in the majors, you have to look at guys and you have to itemize who they are, okay? So you're either a potential building block, you're a potential trade chip, or you are, as I like to say, a road to nowhere, okay? And I say that, you know, kiddingly, like, I'm not trying to be nasty to people, but, like, that's what you do. Each guy falls into one of those three categories, okay? Potential building block, potential trade chip, road to nowhere. Nelson Cruz is a road to nowhere. All due respect, I think he's a possible future Hall of Famer. He's had an excellent career. Everyone raves about him as a human being. Okay, none of this is personal, but he's going to be gone after this season. So you don't prioritize Nelson Cruz. You prioritize a Joey Meneses. You prioritize a CJ Abrams. You prioritize a Luis Garcia. You prioritize a K-Bear Ruiz. So I'm with you on that, no doubt. This is awesome. It's great to see this. Are you a law firm partner looking for a better situation for your practice and a blockbuster contract
worthy of Joey Fourbags Meneses?
If so, you should call Mason Kalfas of Zenith Legal in Washington, D.C. He works with law firms and lawyers on finding the perfect match. No platoons, just superstars. Some lawyers switch firms because of conflict. Some lawyers switch firms for a better platform for their practice. And some lawyers switch firms for more money. You need the Scott Boras of Legal Headhunters working for you, and that's Mason. Mason will work with you to find a better fit for your practice and ultimately the best deal for you and your entire team. Call him today at 202-486-3535 or check out his website, zenithlegal.com. This is an unprecedented time in the legal market, and many top firms are looking to expand. Call Mason today. Zenith Legal also works with associates and distinguishes itself on personal service. Zenith Legal doesn't just spam resumes out to law firms. Zenith Legal talks to the right people and gets your resume in front of the decision makers who matter. Whether you are a rainmaker partner or a mid-level associate, give Mason Kalfas at Zenith Legal a call today to accelerate your career. Call today, 202-486-3535.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
First base side of the rubber, kicks and delivers, swing and a line drive, base hit into left field, rounding third, Hernandez coming home, he will score! The throw going towards second. Ildamaro. Vargas does it again. Another clutch hit for the Nationals. He drives in his 13th run of the year. His ninth in 24 games as a National. And this game is all even here in the bottom of the eighth inning.
If not for the heroics of Joey Meneses, we would be singing the praises loudly and proudly of some other Nats. And you know what? Let's go ahead and sing those praises, at least to some extent, right now. Ildamaro Vargas. I mean, speaking of heroes for the Nats out of nowhere over these last few weeks, Ildamaro Vargas, of course, weeks ago now, supplanted Michael Franco as the Nats' every game third baseman. Well, Vargas on Thursday was the Nats' starting shortstop as Abrams got a rare day off in terms of starting anyway. And Vargas on Thursday only went 1-for-5, but the one was a big RBI single. Vargas in an Nats one-run eighth, a two-out RBI single through the left side of the infield to tie the game at three. And he had a steal of second base. This is another guy who goes back to early August when the Nats were at least trying to make trades. They only ended up making two trades. But the first of the two trades, August 1st, the Nats dealt their super utility man, Aire Adrianza, to Atlanta. The Nats on August 1st selected the contract of Vargas from AAA Rochester. This is another guy who is an older player. He is not some, you know, 20-something. This is Vargas's age 30 season. So think about that. Meneses and Vargas, each guy out of nowhere, each guy brought up from AAA Rochester, each guy age 30 season, and each guy producing in stunning fashion for the Nats. Vargas over 89 major league plate appearances for the Nats, OPS of 836. And again, this is a guy known for his defense, not for his bat, and yet he continues to hit. He has had some big hits, and he had another big hit on Thursday.
First off, a little bit of confusion that I would like to have cleared up by the Nationals Twitter account while we mention it. They tweeted out Vargy and then said he also goes by Sparky, and I heard Franzen call him Sparky, so I would love some clarification on what his nickname is as we move forward. But in addition to all the offense, Al, that you talk about, one thing I really like today is he played at shortstop as CJ Abrams had the day off until he pinch ran late in the game. He was a very capable backup shortstop. I mean, that's something you couldn't say a month ago or at any point in this season. As we talked about, if Meneses can be on the opening day roster in 2023, I don't think any of us want Ildemar Vargas starting at third base next season on opening day. But as him as the backup shortstop and as the backup utility infielder, who we know maybe has a little bit of a bat as well, that to me is also another positive development.
Yeah, I mean, you think about what third base could be for the Nats next season. You know, we don't know what's going to be with Carter Kieboom. You cannot go into next year with Carter Kieboom as your number one option at third base. He can be a option, okay? Like, I don't have a problem with that, but he can't be the option. So you have to say, all right, we need inventory at third base. We need options at third base. Vargas can be an option at third base. And to your point, he's got the defensive versatility. So at the very least, you can have him as your super utility man, you know, not a starter, but someone who you can plug and play in a variety of positions. Yeah, I mean, I would not have an issue with Vargas being on the team next season. You know, again, I don't think you view him as like some piece for the future, but that's okay. Like, not everyone has to be 22 right now. You're trying to accumulate guys who can play for you. And again, maybe Vargas isn't a potential building block, but he could be a potential trade chip. You know, he could be someone who could be of service to a team next season. You were able to trade Aire Adrianza this year. Why couldn't you trade Ildemar Vargas next year if, in fact, he produces for you? So another big hit for Vargas on Thursday. How about K-Bear Ruiz? He did not start on Thursday, day game after a night game. But Ruiz in that Nats four-run 10th inning, a pinch, one-out RBI single through the right side of the infield on a 1-2 pitch to cut the Nats' deficit to 5-4. Another big hit in this game. K-Bear Ruiz this season is 5-for-13 as a pinch hitter. He has not had a great offensive season. You know, he's been okay, but, you know, for catcher, you kind of judge offense a little bit differently. But as a pinch hitter, he's been quite good, 5-for-13 this season.
Yeah, and the fact that when he, you know, has these days off and he's just a pinch hitter, the fact he's a switch hitter is such another tool in his tool belt. That was a really nice at-bat that he had. I'm always impressed by guys that pinch hit in these long games. They've been sitting on the bench for 3 hours and 45 minutes, and then they come out and get a hit. And he was certainly an important part of the late innings. I do like seeing him. You know, a lot of teams that their starting catcher isn't someone who's known for their bat at all, and a lot of managers don't really want to use them unless they have to. As a pinch hitter, it's nice that Davey Martinez can trust his starting catcher to come off the bench on the off days.
Yeah, I mean, there are so few truly good offensive catchers in baseball that if you have someone who can hit at least a little, that gives you a leg up on people. Now, the hope of K-Bear Ruiz is that he can hit a lot, not just a little. We'll see. But yeah, I mean, he has been actually quite the weapon as a pinch hitter, especially lately. He's had some pinch hits over these last few weeks. So Joey Meneses, hero. Ildemar Vargas, hero. K-Bear Ruiz, a hero. Lane Thomas was good for the Nats on Thursday. He was your leadoff batter, your starting center fielder, 1-for-4 with a double and two walks. He, in a one-run first for the Nats, had a leadoff first pitch double down the left field line. You know, Lane Thomas has been better lately. He, for the month of August, slugged .468. This was a weird game for the Nats offensively. So the Nats in this series did hit. The bats did wake up. But the Nats on Thursday, 4-for-18 with runners in scoring position. And you had some whacked out lines in the final box score. Luis Garcia, 0-for-4 with a walk and 3 strikeouts, left 6 men on base. Cesar Hernandez, who was a starting third baseman in this game, we had a question recently, who's the Nats' backup third baseman? Well, Cesar Hernandez is your backup third baseman, but he on Thursday, 0-for-3 with a walk and a hit by pitch, left 5 men on base. But how about what happened with Alex Call in this game? So he went 1-for-4, left 4 men on base, but the one was a triple. Alex Call in the bottom of the second, a leadoff triple to the left center field gap, but didn't score. The Nats had a lot of opportunity in this game to score even more runs than the team ended up scoring. It's funny, you don't often complain, especially with this Nats team. You score 7 runs, you should have done better, but you actually could make the case Nats in this game, 7 runs. The 7 runs came on 11 hits and 6 walks. The Nats could have put up like 10 runs in this game with how many guys that the team had on base.
It was funny because the offense right away in the bottom of the first two batters, right? You have Thomas with the leadoff double. Meneses knocks him in. The Nats go up 1-0. They're moving the line. It felt very unusual for this season. We're not used to that, right? And then the next inning, Alex Call with the leadoff triple, and you just knew he wasn't going to score. I mean, you could, I almost wrote it in my notes before the inning even ended. So that was a real splash in the water of reality after the way the bottom of the first began. Alex Call, am I saying this correctly, has not played since August 23rd before today?
He has not been playing much. Is that the date? I know he's barely been playing.
That's ridiculous. I mean, he should be playing a few times a week. As you said, let's find out what we have here. The Nats made the move to get him when he was available after Cleveland got rid of him. Let's see what we got here. Frankly, I'd love to see some days where the outfield is Thomas, Robles, and Call, and just those three guys. And Meneses is at first base and Voit's DHing. And we just see what we have here. Kind of touching on the earlier conversation. Cleveland, for those who don't know, they didn't want to get rid of him. They didn't get rid of him because he was hitting 188 or anything. They got rid of him because they were in an odd roster crunch. You know, it's a numbers game, and sometimes this just sort of happens. And they're a team that's in first place, so they have to keep their eye on the day-to-day and winning this season. So let's find out what Alex Call is. And I really liked, of course, that RBI triple.
The Nats claim Call off waivers from Cleveland on August 7th. I've mentioned this. You know, he was a third-round pick of the White Sox in the 2016 MLB draft out of Ball State. So, you know, he's not just someone who, like, has never done anything. Like, no, there actually is a little bit of pedigree here to Alex Call. And to your point, let's just see some more. You know, maybe he's nothing, but maybe he's a something. You know, give him some opportunity here. And, you know, let's try to find out what the Nats have in Alex Call. Hey guys, it's Al Galdi for Window Nation. We are into September, a time for pennant races in baseball, and Window Nation is offering pennant race worthy savings. New windows from Window Nation at half the price. Get 2 free windows with every 2 windows that you buy, plus pay nothing with no interest until 2025. Lower your energy bills, raise the value of your home with new energy efficient windows from Window Nation. Visit windownation.com or call 866-90-NATION and tell Window Nation that Al Galdi sent you. Window Nation windows are the best. You know, the longer that you have old drafty windows, the more money that you're wasting on your heating and cooling bills. Window Nation has saved customers over $60 million on energy bills. And the average Window Nation installer has over 16 years of experience with 20,000 windows installed. Window Nation windows are great, and Window Nation windows are installed right the first time. Take advantage of this terrific deal. Buy 2 windows, get 2 windows free. This goes for any style of new window from Window Nation, and pay nothing until 2025. Visit windownation.com or call 866-90-NATION. That's windownation.com or 866-90-NATION, and tell Window Nation that Al Galdi sent you.
Now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. The way I take care of my mind is daily exercise. It is essential for me. There are plenty of ways to support a healthy brain, like learning a new language or taking power naps. There's also BetterHelp online therapy. Everyone I know who does therapy swears by it. It feels like all I hear these days is how you have to start doing therapy. BetterHelp is online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat only therapy sessions, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you don't have to fight traffic or look for parking. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/natschat. That's better, HELP.com/NatsChat.
Spino has just been masterful spotting that curveball. Strikeout number 4 and out number 2. So Spino has had 9 swings on his curveball. He's thrown 13 of them. The A's have swung at it 9 times and they've missed it 7 times. My.
Well, I referenced Joey Meneses as our guy, Joey Fourbags. The original our guy on the Nats Chat podcast, of course, is the secret weapon, Paolo Espino. And there's something fitting, something poetic about it in this game that was like the ultimate crowning of Joey Meneses, at least so far. We also had Paolo Espino shining. Paolo Espino was good, really good for the Nats in this game. Again, Cade Cavalli was supposed to be the Nats starting pitcher. We thought up until a day or two ago that Corey Abbott would be the Nats starting pitcher for this game. No, Paolo Espino ended up being the starting pitcher for this game. It's like typical, right? Paolo Espino, afterthought, like who, what, Paolo, yeah, that guy. He ends up starting, and he does a really nice job. 1 run in 5 innings, 6 strikeouts versus no walks. How do you like that strikeout-to-walk ratio? 6 strikeouts, no walks. Paolo only gave up 5 hits, a homer, and 4 singles. He threw a lot of strikes, 66 pitches, 43 strikes versus 23 balls. The only big mistake by Paolo in this game was him giving up a leadoff homer to Shea Langeliers to left field on a 1-2 pitch in the top of the 5th to tie the game at 1. A lot of big hits in this game on 1-2 pitches. But, you know, with Paolo, it's funny because he has not been as good as a starter as he was as a reliever, but there have been some starts in which he has looked like he did as a reliever, i.e. throwing a lot of strikes, registering some strikeouts, not issuing many, if any, walks. And that's how he looked on Thursday. Now, the A's are a really bad hitting team, although ask Eric Fetty, you know, the A's are not automatic outs, apparently. But Paolo looked good, did a good job against a bad lineup. Your updated Paolo numbers for the season, 35 games, 15 starts, 96 total innings at ERA of 4.22. He's not supposed to be a starter for the Nats. He keeps those starting games for the Nats, and he did a good job on Thursday.
Yeah, he looked really good, I thought. Other than the home run he gave up, I thought that his off-speed stuff was working well, especially with 2 strikes. He was able to get those 6 strikeouts. I was really surprised that he was pulled after 5 innings, only at 66 pitches. I was looking at his recent pitch counts. There was one game he did go over 100, a lot of games in the high 80s. There were a few games in the low 70s. He had faced Kemp, so he had just faced the leadoff hitter for a third time, and I'm guessing that Davey didn't want him to go through the heart of the Oakland lineup for a third time. To me, I would have liked to see him come out and pitch the 6th inning, especially since there's no off day coming up, so maybe you can give the bullpen a little bit of extra help there. In the end, they won. It all worked out, though the 6th inning was a bit of an adventure for Victor Arano. But I really like what I saw from Paolo today, and he's got some really tough matchups the rest of the way with the NL East and St. Louis. So this might be our last good Paolo start for a little bit. I hope I'm wrong, but I sure did enjoy it today.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, I was okay with Davey pulling Paolo because I think with Paolo, there's a feeling of get out while the getting's good. You don't want to push him too much, you know, that there is sort of a limitation on how deep into a game you're going to get good Paolo. So I can't say that I was that displeased with the decision, but it didn't work out. The Nats bullpen was not particularly good in this game. Davey ended up using 6 relievers in the game. They combined to allow 4 runs, 3 earned in 5 innings. And even that doesn't accurately portray what the bullpen was in this game. The damage off the pen could have been a lot worse. You mentioned Victor Arano. He did toss a scoreless top of the 6th. But he tossed that scoreless top of the 6th despite issuing a hit by pitch and a walk and giving up a single. He loaded the bases with 1 out. He did, though, then induce a 5-4-3 double play for the 2nd and 3rd outs. Then came the Jake McGee show. He got charged with 2 runs and got just 2 outs. He, in Oakland's 2-run 7th, issued a leadoff 8-pitch walk of Christian Pache and gave up a 2-out first pitch RBI single to Tony Kemp through the right side of the infield for a 2-1 A's lead. Then Carl Edwards Jr. came into the game. He and that Oakland 2-run 7th faced 3 batters, but only got 1 out. This was not a good appearance for Carl Edwards Jr. He gave up 2 2-out singles. Now, you know, he didn't get, like, ravaged in this game. He only gave up 2 singles, but he did give up 2 singles. A 2-out opposite field single by Sean Murphy through the right side of the infield. That was a play at which Joey Meneses committed his fielding error. And then Edwards gave up a 2-out RBI single by Seth Brown to center field on a 1-2 pitch. pitch. There you go again for a 3-1 A's lead. Erasmo Ramirez came into the game. He did toss a scoreless top of the eighth, but even he got into some trouble. He, in that scoreless top of the eighth, gave up a two-out triple to Christian Pache to the right center field gap on a ball on which Lane Thomas could not make a sliding catch. The only Nats reliever in this game who truly looked good was Kyle Finnegan. He tossed a perfect top of the ninth to preserve a 3-all tie. That was a great job by Finnegan. And then came Hunter Harvey in the top of the 10th. He allowed two runs, one of which was earned. Did retire the first two batters he faced, but issued a 2-out 9-pitch walk. And then Harvey gave up a 2-out 2-run double to Shea Langeliers off the right center field scoreboard for a 5-3 A's lead. And then Harvey issued another walk, a 2-out 6-pitch walk of Christian Pache. So a lot of base runners off Nats relievers in this game. And, you know, this was a game in which the offense really did win the game. I mean, credit to Paolo. He did a good job. But the offense won this game. You know, most of the Nats' recent wins, to whatever extent we've had recent wins for the Nats, have come in large part due to pitching and defense and just the offense doing just enough to win. You know, in this game, the offense did struggle with runners in scoring position, but the offense, for the most part, led the way in this victory.
Talk about the bullpen. Christian Pache reached base all three times he was up to bat. Two walks and a triple. Christian Pache, for those who remember him with Atlanta, he cannot hit. He is well below the Mendoza line. So when McGee walked him, that was really disappointing. And then, you know, hey, triples happen, whatever. But you should not be allowing Christian Pache to reach base three times. But yeah, the bullpen didn't pitch well against a very weak Oakland lineup. But I'm not going to beat him up because the bullpen has been the best part of the team this season. And as you said, Finnegan was fantastic at the night. I thought that was one of his best innings of the season. And, you know, the Nats came in with a head of steam into the bottom of the ninth. But they had a tough task today. They had to throw five frames, and Joey Fourbags rescued him in the end.
He did. He absolutely did. A few other things here with the Nats. Believe it or not, we, prior to the game, got a Steven Strasburg update. Steven Strasburg is a pitcher for the Nats. They took him with a number one overall pick in 2009. He actually was the MVP of the World Series in 2019, in case you're unfamiliar with Steven Strasburg. If you're unfamiliar with him, you are forgiven because you never hear about the guy anymore, okay? He's basically disappeared. Nobody talks about him. Nobody brings it up. This guy is a mega money pitcher, one of the most important players in the history of the franchise. And he's like disappeared. You know, his future, how he's doing, he's made one major league start this season. You hear nothing about his situation. Well, Davey Martinez, during his pregame press conference on Thursday, did give us an update, kind of, sort of, on Steven Strasburg. So, of course, he is coming off the thoracic outlet syndrome surgery of last year, came back this year, made the one start, has been out with injury since then. Davey said that Strasburg is still essentially not doing much of anything. Quote, he actually is feeling better, though, but he's just doing strengthening stuff. But he said he feels a little bit better. So for us, that's a step in the right direction. But there's nothing new. He's not going to throw anytime soon. End quote. Now, what was so funny about all of this is that Davey, as was the case with Cade Cavalli on Tuesday, would not say that Strasburg is done for the season. I don't know if this was like an organizational edict that was given by Mike Rizzo that you can't say that anyone is done for the season, but Davey wouldn't say that Strasburg is done for the season, even though it's been pretty obvious to like everyone that Strasburg is in fact done for the season. But it was nice just to get some kind of an update on this guy. He's become like Bigfoot, you know, like you've heard the name, but you've never actually seen the actual entity. You know, it's kind of like, geez, can we hear something on him? So I was glad we heard something on him. But yeah, I mean, in my mind anyway, he's done for the season. He's been done for the season for a while. And I think that this is going to be a really big thing moving forward. What happens with him? What happens with that contract? I think new ownership could have something to say about everything. But yeah, we got a Steven Strasburg update on Thursday.
Yeah, I laughed when I saw the update for all the reasons that you mentioned. And it's, you know, he is the most expensive player on the roster, and he's supposed to be, in theory, their ace. So yeah, he's so important to the team, and we never hear about him. We never talk about him anymore. While you're going through all that, Al, I don't know if this hits you the other day. This just hit me right now. Forgive me for playing catch up on this, but we're going to mark down 2022 season. Of all the million things that happened this year, it's looking like we will, in the end, have only had one Strasburg start and one Cavalli start, both guys likely to have just one start. There are a lot of ways that you could sum up this season really quickly and how rough it's been for the fans and in the record books, but that's one of them right there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, at least with Cavalli, you know, there's still a lot to be said and done with him. With Strasburg, it's a sad situation because it really does feel like the end. And it's just a matter of how exactly does it end up ending. But, you know, here we are now. This is season number three of the 7-year, $245 billion contract to which he was re-signed in December 2019. He, in the 2020 season, made a mere 2 starts. He, in the 2021 season, made a mere 5 starts. And he, this season, has made and most likely will end up making just the 1 start. So you're talking about 8 starts over the last 3 seasons, with still 4 seasons left on the contract. I've said this, and I do believe this. You're not going to keep going through this every year of him making, you know, 1 or 2 starts and then being out hurt again. And when I say you, I don't just mean the team. I would be surprised if he wants to keep doing this every year and mounting that horse. Now, look, he's not a quitter. I would think that he still wants to pitch and maybe he makes another go of it next season. But how many more years are we going to do this? This is 3 consecutive years now of him barely pitching due to injury. The body is just failing him. And again, it's sad. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be interesting when the new ownership takes over. Is there some sort of a buyout that's agreed to? Does ownership go to Strasburg and say, hey, let's make this easy on everyone. We'll pay you 70 cents on the dollar. You know, you're going to get a whole lot of money, but, you know, we're not going to keep doing this for the next 4 years. Does maybe Strasburg go to ownership and say, look, let's talk about what we can do here because I don't want to keep putting my body through this. I don't know. You know, I don't think anyone's going to blame him if he ends up walking away at some point in the next year or so. I don't know when the actual end would come. Maybe it is still a year or so away. But I can't fathom that we're going to keep doing this every year. This is becoming kind of ridiculous that every year, you know, there's a conversation of, well, you know, if they could just get the Strasburg of 2019 back. And it's like, how many more years are we going to keep having that conversation? That guy's not coming back. And it's really unfortunate. You know, I think that the lack of information that we've gotten on his recovery this year is especially telling because it kind of feels like the team and probably he himself are out of answers, that there's nothing left to say anymore, that the situation, as the saying goes, is what it is. And we all kind of know what the ultimate result is going to be. And it's just a matter of everyone being comfortable and sort of finally accepting that ultimate result.
My hunch on this is that he gives it another go next year whenever he feels ready to give it another go, whatever giving another go means. And if that ends in similar fashion to how this year ended, then my guess is we'll start getting lawyers involved and having those conversations that you talked about with buyouts or thing like that. I'm on a similar train of thought with you.
I wonder, too, if maybe the way to do this with this next try, assuming there is a next try, is bullpen. And you stop trying to have him be a starter because, you know, again, the body is pretty clearly communicating that it's not up to the task of being a starting pitcher. And maybe the way to do this is just to go an inning or so at a time. You know, it's kind of funny. You could end up with Strasburg and Corbin in the Nats bullpen at some point here in the next year or so. You could end up with the single most expensive bullpen in the history of bullpens, but that's a different conversation. But yeah, I mean, maybe that's the way to approach this is you say, all right, Stras, let's try you as a reliever. And then if things are going really well, then maybe eventually we could try to have you start some games. But, you know, this thing of still trying to have him go out there and pitch 5, 6, 7 innings, like how many more years are we going to dance this dance? It's not happening, man. It's just not happening.
This contract runs through the 2026 regular season.
Yeah.
2026.
Look, a lot of us, myself included, were okay with that contract when it was given. It clearly was a mistake. And looking back on it, the red flags were everywhere. In his 30s, injury history, you know, but everyone was coming off the emotional high. Nobody wanted to say, well, you can't lose Rendon and Strasburg. You got to keep one of them. And I think a lot of people said, well, keep Strasburg because he had had a very good 2019 season. He had actually demonstrated a durability that season. He obviously was sensational that postseason. You said, all right, give him the money. Let's see what happens. And the contract just has been one of the biggest contract fails in sports history. You have to say that. I mean, $245 million. Again, you've gotten a total of 8 starts over the last 3 seasons. It's not his fault, okay? It's not, you know, he's not soft. None of this is his fault. But it just has not worked out. Well, you tell us what you think. Hit us up on Twitter, @Nats_chat. You can email the podcast, natschatpodcast joeymeneses@gmail.com. Share with us your Joey Meneses thoughts, your Joey Meneses insights, again, in a season in which there hasn't been a lot of fun things to sink your teeth into. This Meneses thing is fun. He's doing an outstanding job, and it was great to see him do as he did on Thursday. You can find the Nats Chat Podcast on Instagram, @NatsChatPodcast. Is our Instagram handle. If you're listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, please give the podcast a 5-star rating if you haven't yet done that. The 5-star ratings are very much appreciated. All Nats radio highlights on Nats Chat are courtesy of 106.7 The Fan. Mark Zuckerman will be back with me on the next installment of the Nats Chat podcast. Until then, for Tim Shovers, I'm Al Galdi, and we thank you for listening to the Nats Chat podcast.
Here's the set of the pitch. Swinging a ground ball toward the middle and on through, a base hit into center field. Rounding third is Thomas being waved home. Up with the ball is the center fielder Stevenson. He'll lob it in towards second base. Thomas has scored on a single up the middle for Joey Meneses, driving in his 12th big league run, and continues to pile up hit after hit.